world is where I want to be. Now your forge has become a transport, and your sacred space begins to transform. It could be a spaceship or a space station, or a bungalow in a tropical location. Or you're in Antarctica on an expedition, staying warm and fulfilling your mission. 20,000 feet under the sea, relaxing like Nemo in your submarine. Sitting in a treehouse in Andor Village, or a medieval cathedral about to be pillaged. Chilling in the cabin of a 100-foot yacht. A fort can be whatever you want. Well, I know what I'm saying might sound a little crazy, but hear me out, cause I think that maybe if you consider my words might be right, you'll improve your existence and change your life. Making believe and pretending with your brain is a million times better than video games. So don't be afraid to build a fort. You'll find it to be much better than sports. Dismiss those feelings of shame and guilt. You're the lord of the manor, be proud of what you built. So the next time you get home from the food court, head down to the basement and build a fort. From a futon, I'm a proud promoter, I'm always indoors. The joy that comes from building a fort. 34, there ain't nothing wrong with building a fort with a mattress from a futon. I'm a proud promoter, I'm always indoors. The joy that comes from building a fort.
Oh my god. Isn't that just a banger?
You know what it is? It's memories. It makes you nostalgic for memories you don't have.
Well, I have those memories.
Building a fort?
Yeah. I have an older brother. Building a fort goes without saying. I remember, this is gross. One time, my brother and I were playing in the house, and of course, every object can be made into a gun. So you have, the easiest one is a stick. Stick outside, always going to be a gun, maybe a sword.
Especially if it's got little, like, perpendicular parts.
Yeah, that's the trigger. And then I think my parents finally got hip and just bought us plastic guns of every sort. Squirt guns, super soakers, and then the ones that you have inside that they pop. So you put in like little cartridges.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll snap. Pop guns. And then you just had ones that made noise. Anyways, chasing each other around the house, and my brother picked up a stick, and I was like, da, 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 behind him, running to the fort, ran into the fort, and jumped on the couch, and the stick went through his hands and ended up going into his shoulder because he was holding it shoulder high. It goes into his shoulder. I remember like looking at, you know, my brother with the blood running down his chest, and he went to our parents. We're like, my parents were like, okay, hold on. Let me pull this stick out your shoulder and, you know, see if we can make this work.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, hey, that's the joy of having two boys running around the house. It's permanent war. It's war in the house.
My sister was 4 years older than me, so we didn't have that close of play. We played together, but I always remember, probably the earliest I can remember doing this is in elementary school, maybe like second or third grade, like playing orphans, which I think might be like a gendered girl version of playing guns. But it wasn't just like, oh no, look at us, we're poor orphans. It's like, we're orphans, we've made it, we've found our own home, we've set it up, I'm cooking garlic soup, and you are going out to steal from all the people because we're poor. Like, it was this whole universe of like street urchin.
Okay, I've never heard of playing orphan before.
Oh, man.
It was big in your house.
Yeah, I mean, in my friendship group.
Oh, not you. Okay, I thought you said your sister.
No, this was with my school friends because we had, you know, I was in Singapore and we had like, basically recess was just like out in the rainforest. And so you could find like edible things. Like they had honeysuckle, they had like those little like onion grass that you could find little tiny onion bulbs and just gnaw on those.
I think it's an inventive way for young women to get together and explain how they were thrown in the same circumstances.
Yeah.
We're all orphans. Yeah. Like, and it takes care of backstory.
We're all orphans. You know,
it's like
the D&D thing.
It's very
present.
You meet
present. In a pub. Yeah. We're all orphans.
It's very present oriented, which is like, what are we going to do together now that we've found each other?
Exactly.
And we'll get into backstories later, but like right now we need onion garlic soup. Or what have you. So what are you laughing at? I can't read it that far. I'm not wearing my reading glasses.
So I've been trying to get in touch with the author of the songs we just listened to.
Of Hank and Dad. You're trying to get into the mind of Jeb Innerlandy.
So I texted, we need you on the show to talk about the origin of Hank and Dad.
Yeah.
And this person finally texted back and wrote, I think you have the wrong number, lol. which I'm not sure. That is a little bit of the humor of our friend.
It is
the wrong number.
It is.
Okay, it's the wrong number, according to the angels.
Yeah, because Jeb changed his number recently.
Well, that will explain it.
That will explain it. But yeah, I have to say, all praise to young people who spend their time creating worlds. All praise to the people who, if you know, as Hank and as the song goes, you're 34, what's wrong with building a fort? You know, if only 34-year-olds could muster the strength it takes to build a fort.
If only.
Yeah.
Now, was it a pillow fort? Was it a wooden fort?
Always pillow. And in fact, there is a sort of legend in my family about... I thought that was Jeb there. There's a legend in my family about, you know, my brother and I grew up. He's just a year older than me. So we would spend our time basically, as I said, permanent war. Whenever we were not in school, we'd go home. And I think if you opened our drawers, it was nothing but camo. Like different colors of camo. I'm from South Florida. And it was like the classic green, brown, black camo. But then we had urban camo, which was gray and black and white.
Yeah.
Then we had tiger style, you know, whatever. We had all the different camos. And, you know, we'd black our face, you know, we'd put the war paint on and all that
football
stuff.
Football lines or whatever.
And what we would do is then go out into the neighborhood and look for other kids imagining things and try to take over their imaginative world.
Enemy kids.
Yeah.
Another Hank and Dad classic.
And our neighbors were these two really wonderful women, these two young girls. And they were like the same ages as us. So it was natural that we were friends.
Of course.
But we just didn't occupy the same imaginal universe.
Right. They were playing orphans. And they're like, why did these gun-toting weirdos show up to my orphanage?
Yeah, maybe something like that. And I remember they had a hideout. We were more nomadic. Mm-hmm. You know, we had bikes. So we would just kind of, you know, we would just circulate. But they had this fort. And I remember it was a Sunday and we knew they would be in their fort, which was like in brush. There's like a lot of scrub.
I'm telling you, they were playing orphanage.
Okay, playing orphanage. And we showed up and they had this beautiful arch. You walked in and there was like a tree that would arch above, created a natural entranceway. And we walked in and said, hey, everyone out, up against the wall. And we were going to like execute them for some reason.
Oh boy.
And they're like, you have to get out. We're like, no, we don't. We own this fort now.
Uh-oh.
And then I drew my Nerf gun.
Uh-oh.
You know, the stakes were pretty high. And they said, get out now. And my brother jumped up on the arch. And I don't know if he pulled it down or it broke under his weight. And that thing came crashing down. And we scrabbled out of there.
Yeah,
we got the hell out.
More damage than you could have imagined.
And then we were like, they'll never find us. We were like
right
on our bikes. Like they're literally our neighbors. Like biking into the sunset. And we were like, we're scot-free.
They'll never know who we really were.
Yeah, because I guess if you play hard enough, you're fully there.
Oh, yeah.
There's no part of your mind that's drawing you back.
No.
And I think young kids really can lose themselves in the imagination. And I think that's what allows them, if they go to Disney World, to participate in what they know full well is an imaginative play. But I think it allows them to get absorbed in scary movies or in, you know, when the Suitmation people come out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it allows them to become... You know, to quiet that part of their mind that insists on, you know, responsible, you know, interaction with what the reality principle.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can still remember storylines from games that I played, you know, like fully imagined realities. And I'm like, oh, no, but of course, that particular character and that particular character had beef.
Yeah.
Because I would always, you know, I'd return
in your imagination
story.
World. Yeah. In your play pretend world.
Right. So I had these like toy horses, like very realistic toy horses.
Yeah.
And other realistic toy animals. But the horses, I think because they were biggest, like I never was really a horse person, but the horses were bigger. So I think they were the leads just for that simple reason.
Yeah.
There's a lot of drama. They were always, because it's my bedroom, right? And so they're going from one end of the bedroom to the other. Oh, my.
Oh, that was one of these explosions in the mission.
Oh, I don't like that.
I'm glad. Oh my! Did you see me? I jumped up in the air with both feet and both hands, like an old timey prospector.
Everybody's just looking around.
Dude, you didn't see this, but in the studio, my earphones flew off my head and landed back
on. Did a little spin,
they
and then
did
they
spin.
Landed right back on.
We hear that all the time, and we don't know what it is. It sounds like a small... I mean, one time we were on the street and we saw it, and it seemed like a flashbang.
Yeah.
I think that the... What did he say?
He said, somebody's litting off fucking bombs over here. I don't think that's what's happening.
No, I do think it is a flashbang.
Yeah, but just one.
Yeah, I think they throw it out the side of a car and scoot away. What's so funny?
No, no, I'm just remembering your reaction. Now that the initial panic has subsided, you did do, like, in cartoons when you see the, like, jump with, like, four
that's
limbs.
What I was saying. That's what I was saying. And the hat goes in the air. Yeah, yeah. You looked over. I'm sitting on a stool, both legs up, both arms up, headphones. Yeah, yeah.
Yep, that's what it looked like, everybody. Yeah.
So we're getting a special call here. Let me see if I can patch it in.
Nice.
I'm going to have to ask our guest to turn down their radio. Let's see if this works. Hello, caller, can you hear us?
Yes, hello.
Caller, thank you so much for calling up and for messaging us on the chat, seeing if we locked the door to the radio station.
Yeah, I heard the loud explosion, and I just wondered what was going on.
Well, we hear those explosions more than we'd like, to tell you the truth, and we remain totally puzzled by what. But this isn't a show of explosions and weird noises. This is a show of pilgrimage and power spots. And I'm curious, caller, who I'll just make this clear to give context. This is my mom on the phone. So, Mom, thanks for calling. Do you have any insight into what my brother and I were like, or what imaginative world we occupied at any given time?
Oh, absolutely. I remember lots of fun times, like the time you made one of your bedrooms into a booby-trapped ship, and you took lines off our sailboat and tied it bed rail to doorknob to closet knob back to the bunk bed, so when you open the door you couldn't get in. You were in like a Chinese jump rope situation.
All right, so who were we preparing the trap for? I mean,
me, you know, myself and your dad. You know, you
hey, come in here, we need your help.
Yeah, and then yell, and then, hey Mom, come on in, and you're giggling and covering your mouth, and you know, of course I played right into it and trapped in the spider web. And oh yeah,
you know, that's where I get my good bedroom sense of humor then. It's clearly from you.
And your bedroom was usually a Skeletor, just all spooky, you know.
Spooky kid.
Lots of action figures and castles and just real, real imaginative toys. Yeah. Blocks.
And did my brother and I present ourselves as characters ever? Like, would I say, hey, don't call me that. I'm Skeletor.
Oh, yeah. You went through time periods where you had different names for yourself, and we needed to call you that.
Anything in particular?
And lots of camouflage. No, just whatever period you were in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's
fun days.
I have to say, as a young person, camo just seemed the most practical outfit in case I would ever need to run away. Yeah.
Well, you thought you were invisible or no one could see you. And, you know, I'm standing right there talking to you. You really took it to extremes. One of your birthday parties was a camo-themed party, and we pitched about 8 pup tents on the back lawn.
Yeah.
And had a big campfire, and everybody had to come in. No, we gave everybody camos when they came to the party. That was their door prize. And blacked out under your eyes, and you slept overnight, and we had hot dogs on sticks and s'mores. Wow. And everybody went home mosquito bitten.
Oh, yeah. But I remember in our backyard, we used to have a big concrete slab, and we used to make fires on it.
Oh,
like, there was a nice concrete slab that maybe was for that. I forget what it was. We eventually had
we put a hot tub on it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, eventually there was a hot tub, which was disgusting. The things that went on in that. We had to drain it and call the CDC.
Thank you.
It was horrible. Yeah. But yeah. I'm curious about our affinity for guns from a young age. I mean, how did that work out? How did we end up children with guns?
Well, I'm not being sexist, but little boys just make everything into a gun. And you had friends who weren't allowed to have guns, and they were in their homes, and they came over. I remember one, I won't say any names, but a banana at breakfast turned into a handgun. A banana.
Naturally.
Yeah. A coat hanger. Oh, yeah. Those were always bent out of shape, held sideways, and a bow and arrow. Always.
Yeah.
Oh, the bow and arrow. I used to do the bow and arrow. Yeah, I imagine myself like a forest spirit with a bow and arrow.
Yeah. Yeah. And how about the time we put a ladder on the home, went up to the second story chimney.
This is just a lawsuit waiting to happen.
Oh, yeah. In this day and age, we would have just, tied a rope from the chimney
to
the
a tree.
to a great big black oak tree that we had out back and made you a zip line.
That's right.
And even these little girls in little black patent leather shoes and big bows in their hair and fancy dresses come over and they would just climb up that ladder.
He was
the best.
It was one of those tall painting ladders that was like 11 feet, you know?
Oh, yeah. And it was as dangerous as you could get.
And there was no easy transition from the top of the ladder to the roof.
So you have to scramble.
No, you have to have someone. You have to have someone kind of help you on the roof from the top of the ladder.
Yeah. Big gap there.
And the only way that you could get off...
You were committed to that zip line.
You were committed to, and we had a mattress that you would have to let go at the right time to bounce off the mattress.
Oh yeah,
yep.
Child endangerment. You went through a WWF phase.
Still am. Still there.
When you probably weighed, I don't know, 48 pounds soaking wet. That was your Halloween costume, mm-hmm. and you had big black belt. You know that signified you'd won.
Dad's belt that he had to wear to work on Monday. So it was, you know.
Probably. And we decked it out with tin foil and magic marker, WWF and stuff. And I loved being the mom of two little boys. So while you're at school, I went out and got all these big cardboard boxes from appliance stores that had refrigerators and sofas in them and stuff. Came home and made you a ring and got styrofoam. And you reenacted
that is
the
so
WWF
fun to bash each other over the head.
I got styrofoam that a lot of the articles were packed in. So, and then you made me videotape it with one of those video recorders that weighed about, I don't know, 29 pounds, and you kept on one shoulder, and you go, "Catch this, Mom," and you'd roll off the couch and almost, you know, someone almost break a neck and hit each other with the styrofoam and sound effects and all that. Those were good times.
And you know, when there's no other option than your imagination.
Yeah.
It just grows stronger and stronger, and you're able to play pretend with any object they give you.
Yes, and that is critical for growth and development of young children. Mm-hmm. Time alone, imagination, pretending, playing in a mud puddle, playing with the hose.
Yeah.
It's not screen time.
Endangerment of life and limb.
Yeah, no, danger is a part of it. No, risk is a part of it. Yeah. That, like, when you walked out of your house and you were able to play outside of your house in the lawn or even go farther around the neighborhood or into – we had a lot of wooded areas near our house.
Yeah, it was a beautiful neighborhood.
It was a beautiful neighborhood.
I remember two other really great – this Indiana Jones, I guess, was a movie. And you were a year apart, so you were about 8 and 9.
All of these stories are just so reckless. I love it.
How about the recycle box, the recycle bin on a skateboard?
Do you know those bins? Stella, do you know those bins are like recycle? These are not garbage cans.
These are plastic bins.
Plastic bins that you were. Yeah, you remember those?
Yeah.
You toss your cans.
They're squat, and
so you'd put that unanchored on a skateboard.
At the top of a hill.
And just let it go. And the recycle bin would slide off the skateboard and go into the ditch.
Of course. Oh,
yeah. Hey, do you remember the worst injury that I can remember sustaining as a young person was, I'll just give you the equation, you can do the math. Basketball, I was playing with a basketball and a baseball bat. And I whammed the basketball and it bounced right back and got me right in the head.
Oh, no.
The thing is, though,
you had some pretty mean pool basketball games, too.
Oh, yeah, we used to play basketball.
People lost teeth, had black eyes. But I think
risk is essential.
The creme de la creme, I think, was when we bought you jet skis. Your father brought you 2 jet skis, and we live in Florida, where snakes and alligators hang out in the canals. And
let's give the full story here. You didn't buy us jet skis. These were owned by a pawn shop, and the owner of the pawn shop owed our father a favor because he couldn't pay. These jet skis changed hands as a form of payment by this pawn shop owner.
Brought them home on a trailer, and we loaded those into the canal behind and beside our house with a fountain in it.
Toxic.
And let you guys go nuts on those jet skis and jumped in the I think about it now, and I just cringe. Oh, boy. Good old days.
Well, good old days. Thanks for taking us down memory lane, Kelly.
It is enjoyable for me, too. Oh. Yes.
Well, thanks for calling in.
Well, I love the show.
Oh, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot.
And always tune in on Fridays, and it's just great.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for calling in, Kelly. Have a great Friday.
Good night. Yes, you too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
An unbiased endorsement for the show.
An objective endorsement by my mother for the show. Well, with that, what do you think we launch into College Years Old?
My favorite song.
Which is, you could just hear.
The joy.
The joy. The fun.
the anticipation.
Enjoy.
Today is the day that you celebrate. Today is the day you graduate. Now your college years old. College years old, college years old. I can't wait to be college years old. College years old, college years old. When I get to be college years old. Parents, siblings, and all of your relations offer you their congratulations. Now it's time. Vacation, save up money for school. The summer came and the summer went. You drive to the campus with your parents. Got your trapper keeper and a new backpack for notebooks, pencils, and pens. College years old, college years old. I can't wait to be college years old. College years old, college years old. When we get to be college years old. Pull up to the dormitory, shake the hand of your new RA, be considerate to your roommate, make the semester great. Choose a major and stay on task. Don't sleep in and don't be late for class. Library time will help you pass every exam that you take.
College years old.
I eat what I want, cause I'm college years old. Teacher says to study and take good notes, but I'm in the back of the room, cracking jokes. My RA, he's a jerk, always up in my biz. I'd rather chug some Sprite and play Ultimate Frisbee. It's me, my homies, we're having a ball. Got my Uncle Jesse posters hanging on the wall. Don't hog the chips and dip, pass the bowl. I'm living it up, cause I'm college years old. Seriously, then you'll graduate, and soon you will be getting a job and getting a salary, earning respect from your friends and family. The prime of your life, it must be told, is when you enter the realm of college years old.
My friend.
band.
Tank top, Kenny Robinson.
Meet my friend.
Amigo Migas.
Meet my friend.
Trumpet Smith.
Meet my friend.
Clip touch, Bob Glutzit.
Meet my friend.
Puppet Toothwee.
Meet my friend.
Salamo de Ploof.
Meet my friend.
Colchester Borgia Beluga Jr.
Meet my friend.
Rabinovich Reginald Tink.
Meet my friend.
Goulash Belvedere.
Meet my friend.
Going to a party and everyone's invited. Yes, everyone's excited. There's so much to do. Gonna have a good time with Cool Ranch Doritos, Kraft Macaroni Odels, and Yoo-Hoo. Totino's and Gino's make the best pizza rose, you know. Set them in the microwave and put them on a plate. Come on, eat some hot snacks and open up your backpacks. Share some food with friends, it's the right thing to do. Come on out to my place on Taco Night Tuesday or Pizza Night Friday. I'd love to see you.
Stella, I know that
those are two of my favorites.
Yeah, I know that you appreciate Hank and Dad as much as I do.
I mean, I can't, like, of all the songs in the world, or artists in the world,
yeah,
I sing little snippets of these songs so often. Because they speak to something very, like, fundamental. So, and you know, we both work on a college campus.
Yeah.
So I can't tell you the number of times a day I see students doing something, or I myself am reminded of something, or I'm doing something, and I'm just singing to myself, college years old, college years old, I can't wait to be college years, because it's such a true thing. College years old is not, oh, I'm 19. I wasn't college years old when I was 19.
Yeah.
I dreamed of college years old when I was 16.
Yeah.
And now, older, I look back at college years old, and yeah, it was not about being 19 or 20. It was about being college years old.
College years old is a fantasy that you have between the ages of 12 and 17.
And then again, between like 25. And
I was about to say between forever. 35 and 45. You look back and you think, man, when I was college years old. What do you make of that idea that it is the best time of your life?
I mean, for me personally, it wasn't.
No.
No.
Really?
I had a great time. I had a fabulous time. You know, I really, I mean, maybe I'm like too resistant to it, but I hate that rhetoric. I hate, like, that was the best time of my life.
Because
mm-hmm. to me, it's like, man, you're just kind of foreclosing yourself to possibilities.
But I do understand why people say that.
I do too. And, I, you know, there are things about it that I think, man,
it's easy
it would be
to romanticize.
Nice. Yeah. And there are things about it that I think, man, that would be nice if that was also a norm going forward. Namely, as the next song we played indicated, Meet My Friends, the fact that, like, when you're in college, you have, at any given time, you can go and see one of 12 different friend groups that yeah. you know very well, or that you're ancillary to, or that you met through a club, or like, I mean, that was for me when I did college theater. A big part of it was I loved just having a little group of people that I would see every night and hang out with. That was like yeah. such a fun goof time.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do now.
It is. As a present-oriented person, I think I'm always in the best time of my life.
Exactly.
Even when it's not so good, I'm like, well, look at me ride the tiger. You know, like.
Yeah, this is the next chapter.
This is the next chapter. Story. And I always, yeah, I'm thankful. I'm gracious. I feel gracious. I feel gratitude.
Grateful, yeah.
I feel grateful for all that stuff.
And I think, you know, I do. There are times that I also feel college years old. And that's not, again, that's not like I feel 20. That's like I have a community spirit, or like a jubilation, or like a curiosity. You know, it's like a. It's more of an energy thing than it is a specific, like, oh, I wish I was 20 again.
I don't
remember really what even being 20 was like.
To tell you the truth, I had a great time in college, to the best of my knowledge. Great time afterwards. But I always feel like I was bringing a lot of energy to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel yeah. like I'm still bringing a lot of energy to yeah. the table. So I wouldn't want to go back, because I did the things I did when I was in college.
Yeah, exactly.
And I did other things.
When you were college years old.
When I was college years old, I did the things that I should and wanted to do, and after I did the things I should have wanted to do, and now I feel like I'm doing stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm doing stuff I haven't done before, mm-hmm. and there's still a lot of stuff I want to do,
mm-hmm.
so I don't want to go back, if that
yeah.
makes sense.
Yeah.
Though, I have to say, I had a clear sense of wanting to do the Camino de Santiago de Compostela in high school, and then I forgot about it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until we got together that I was able to access that dream I had. It's nice to it's nice to have a dream that is waiting for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And will represent itself when the time is right.
Yeah.
That's nice. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, you know, I was recently having a long conversation with a friend about intuition. And she said something which was interesting to me, which, you know, as we've discussed on the show, like the Camino we both independently were thinking of in our lives, and it kind of took the back burner, and then we came together, and I genuinely don't remember. All I remember is that suddenly we were planning the Camino. I don't know how that happened. But I've had a strong affinity for Spain as a place since then as well. And my friend was saying, you know, it's interesting, like, you have a strong affinity for Spain, and, like, you know, it's nothing has worked out so far for you to be there more permanently, but, like, she's like, but I like to think of things like that as intuition, which is to say that, and intuition doesn't have a timeline, which is an important part. Like, some things have a timeline, and some things you can say, oh, I'm going to look forward to that, but intuition might also just alert you to things that are right for you or are real for you or are going to happen for you, but a place that can be frustrating is not knowing when that time will come. You know, but knowing that that's a part of your life in some meaningful way. And I think for me, that the Camino was also like that. I knew it was going to be something.
Yeah.
And it just, the timing just, you know, took whatever time it took, you know?
Yeah, I like the idea of the future leaking through when I was young. And so for whatever reason, whether it was me conducting a ritual now that reverberated so strongly that my 14-year-old self picked
it up. You rang the bells.
Or my 14-year-old self got himself into the headspace where he was able to access some vision of the future. I'm not sure which way it went.
Yeah.
And maybe those aren't exclusive to each other, but yeah, it's just, I have to say, pretty cool to be able to follow whatever impulse took me to the Camino and drew me there. And I think that it really goes back to what we were talking about with respect to imagination. I think that cultivating a relationship with your muse is far more important than wealth, far more important than a career, far more important than any number of commonplace attributes that people celebrate.
Yeah, markers of success.
Markers of success. And it's wild to meet people who are conventionally seen as successful who are just brain dead.
Yeah.
Who that part of their brain, their capacity for joking, their capacity for puns, quick wittedness, repartee, just cracking off one liners, their funny bone is broken. You know, that's the way I'll put it, that they just don't have a funny bone. But it's the opposite when you meet someone that has an extremely well developed funny bone.
Yeah.
And you think, man, they could be a pauper or they could be a prince.
Yeah.
You know, and it really, it's impossible to place, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and not even just like being the person who cracks the jokes and makes the jokes, but also the appreciation of it. You know, that's another thing. Because you can also, or in my experience, I can also meet people who maybe feel a little bit isolated or ground down, let's say. But once they're in a situation of good humor, they can sort of brighten up too. I think there's also a reactive element also. It's not just people who are funny, the funny ones, you know. It can also be like a conviviality.
Oh, I'm convinced that funny is a collective trait. Mm-hmm. I'm convinced that you can't say so-and-so isn't funny definitively.
Right.
I just don't think you've been in a situation where that person feels as though they can.
Feels fun.
Yeah, that person can feel fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that, you know, if the Order of St. George's Horses is anything, we tend to cultivate that collective spirit of communitas, which lends itself to comedy, to humor. And let me be more specific here. I think comedy and humor flow easily as an articulation of a higher state of consciousness. Mm. I think that there is an elevated sense of what is real. And I think comedy is, in a lot of times, self-awareness. Comedy is defying people's expectation in a way that is working on a higher level.
Yeah.
You know, so irony, sarcasm, these can be kind of pedestrian examples of this, but I think good comedy plays with expectations.
Yeah.
And surprises. Good comedy takes you by surprise. You know, I think that's what causes that physiological response of laughter, that ejaculation. Mm-hmm. You know, it's I didn't expect that, and so I'm giving you an emotional response.
Right.
And that emotional response is not, it's not as easy to evoke out of people if they see it coming. They're not going to laugh. They can say, oh, that's funny, there was a buildup and I saw it coming and I'm glad there's a release. But I think that the genuine laughs you get are often unexpected.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And they're experiential. I'm just, again, I'm laughing again. Woo! About you jumping up limbs akimbo when that big bang happened. Like,
yeah.
In the moment, I was shocked, and then it was funny, and now I'm laughing about it again. Or a favorite of mine, if I may share a
go
funny
for it.
Personal thing.
Sure, sure.
Was during the pandemic, we were holed up, and I made a black bean soup,
uh-huh.
And you kindly offered to put away the leftovers.
Yeah.
And I opened the fridge, and there was a mug overflowing, and its overflow was held together by saran wrap.
Dude,
and I don't know why.
Michelle,
there's
I came
nothing
downstairs.
Funny about that, but I was like dying laughing. I was tears in my eyes. I hadn't laughed that hard in so long. And it's situational. It's experiential. It's about our relationship. It's about our soup. It's about the isolation of the pandemic. You know, I can't repeat that joke. It's not. It's not
I
that
came
funny
downstairs,
on air, you know?
And I was worried because you were out of breath on the couch, trying to catch your breath. I was like, is this like, are you having a panic attack?
Is this COVID?
You were laughing so hard you couldn't breathe.
I was crying.
Yeah. You know, that was good.
It was so funny. But again, that's not like a funny thing. Like if I told that, as I just did, you wouldn't necessarily be like, wow, what a knee slapper.
If you were there.
Yeah. So much of it is experiential.
But I'm convinced that holiness is goofy.
Yeah.
I'm convinced that the holy goof is a central figure in the history of humanity's religious impulse.
Oh, yeah.
And I think if for some reason, my highest insights have always been gilded with humor.
Yeah.
And there's something very real and honest about slapstick.
Oh, yeah.
And I suppose in many ways it's allowed me to navigate the world, to be able to see through the seriousness the seriousness that we take, that we really hope others take us. You know what I'm saying? Like, we hope others take us as serious as we take ourselves.
Right, right, right.
But being able to see through serious culture. Mm-hmm.
Or taking that to its logical extent, which is, I hope people see me as seriously as I see them, which is like often I'm laughing and they're laughing as well.
Yeah.
And that's good and great.
Yeah, to be flexible like that and to see the comedy even in the most darkest circumstances.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, I think this is the virtue of cultivating spiritual practices, is recognizing that this is all dust. This is all a dumb show put on by an idiot, you know, for the enjoyment of a...
Sounded very signifying nothing.
Yes. Yeah. And I think having that installed in your mentality allows you to weather storms a little easier.
Yeah.
You know, than someone who takes it all so serious. Yeah. Why so serious? What do you say we jump back into some Hank and Dad here?
All right, what you got on the docket?
When I'm Smart. Do you know that one?
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, the music... just so good.
Well, yeah, the arrangement.
The arrangement, that's the word. Yeah.
Where I can read, so I'm trying to be when I'm smart. When I'm smart, I'll know why trucks have gas. When I'm smart, I would like computers. When I'm smart, I'm smart.
Man, you can't beat that.
No, I'm smart. So we often talk about how good music. Oh boy.
Okay, we don't need to go into this. Is Hey Dad, Hey What?
It's a great Hey Dad, Hey What? Hey Dad, Hey What? It's a good call and response.
Yeah. You see the punk influence there.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I mean, I was gonna say the we talk often about like pop songs, like successful pop songs are good because the reason they're successful in part, I think, is they speak to like an extremely generic sentiment, like tonight's gonna be a good night.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like it's a kind of multi-purpose. You know, it's not like trying to tell some fancy story or whatever, whatever. Not that those aren't good songs, but they just don't reach the same, you know, mainstream appeal. Hank and Dad does that, but in a funny way, because it's like when I'm smart. Everybody has had that feeling of being like, man, when I'm smart,
oh, yeah.
I'll know about the stock market. Or like when I'm college years old, I'm going to go talk to my RA. You yeah. know, it's that yearning.
And Hank and Dad summons it so earnestly.
Exactly. It's not tongue in cheek at all.
No. There's something very honest and pure about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, it doesn't hurt that the musical arrangements, earlier, are just very well textured,
yeah.
very well mastered. Jeb is a studio musician,
right.
So it makes sense that he would put a lot of time into it. And I guess that's where the surprise and enjoyment comes from, is because it's such technical arrangements combined with pure imaginative flow.
Yeah.
And it's rare
yeah,
to find.
Just pure id.
Yeah, pure id. Yeah, pure expression, volcanic eruption of this creative vision. And so we couldn't be any more excited about it. What do you think? Should I play the ultimate, the this was a minor hit.
Okay.
In 2010, when I used to work for a radio or a music blog in Boston, and we sort of manufactured
the hype
around, it's called Pass the Test, and we pumped it on the blog all the time,
yeah.
And people enjoyed it.
Oh, well, there you go.
For good reason, in the way we enjoy it. So I hope you enjoy it.
Brush your teeth when you got bad breath, and when you study hard, you pass the test. Just pass the test, and if you pass the test, it means you pass the test. Pay attention, do your best, and when you work real hard, then you'll pass the test. Never cheat, and never guess, just think real hard and pass the test. An insect, not a pest, and if you know the facts, then you'll pass the test. Birds pass eggs when they're in the nest, and when you're sitting in class, just pass the test. Clothes are dirty, don't get undressed, and when you study hard, you pass the test. Go to sleep, get some rest, and if you want good grades, just pass the test. Test machine.
Pass the test. Pass the test.
To the guy in brown, shout it all around.
Pass the test. Pass the test.
To the guy in red, say what I said.
Pass the test. Pass the test.
And how about Shank and Donovan D?
Pass the test. Pass the test.
Pumphrey Q, how about you?
Pass the test. Pass the test.
The holder never get the homework done. Life parade.
Pass the test. Pass the test.
What about the Merryweather Dance Brigade?
Pass the test! Pass the test!
How about the laugh 'em up, go get 'em, true?
Pass the test! Pass the test!
The whole damn stitching up the road crew!
Pass the test! Pass the test!
And the lollygag and gag posse gang!
Pass the test! Pass the test!
If you're feeling sad, don't get depressed, just sharpen your pencil. Heat it up when you make a mess. So don't pass out, just pass the test. Write it down, but never guess. Fill in the blanks to pass the test. Pass it in and pass the test. And if you want good grades, just pass the test. Pass the test. Pass the test.
Pass the test, Stella.
That's the idea.
How you feeling? How you feeling on radio, on the show?
I'm happy to be on the show. Love show.
Love show. Show's the best. Can't get pumped enough.
Back.
So, you know, we're approaching the end of the show here. And I just want to illustrate our joy about being back and how we get to play our favorite tune.
Mm-hmm.
How we get to play some of our favorite friends' music. It's excellent.
And hear other music coming from around the city.
Yeah, we do. that's part of it. All right, everybody. Well, we're going to sign off for now. Here's going to be Hank and Dad spending the night, followed by maybe a surprise. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, I hope you enjoy, everybody.
a spell of wonder. My favorite television show, I'll let it be known, was such a clever man of impressive stature. It was his nature to live alone, oh so alone, forever adrift in his houseboat home, moored in the harbor, not like any other home. A sense of freedom, a sense of longing for the shores. In this humdrum town, you'll see him drive around in a Jeep so rugged and weathered, dreaming untethered. In a humdrum town, oh, a man so clever. Such a clever man, a man of few possessions, but those who keep have worlds of meaning and value. It would seem all he has to his name is a little matchbook and a little red knife and a mullet full of dreams and a roll of duct tape. A little roll of duct tape, always helping others. Such a clever man, a scientific mind, an altruistic kind of man, not like any other. No, he'd unload the pistol and put down the pistol, for he abhors all firearms. A man out of step and time in the modern climes. A man so clever, a man who never was really loved. So very clever, but I know you live alone. You're so alone, always on your own, forever. Oh, MacGyver.
What's up, everybody? That's right. It's your favorite friends, JoJo and Stellaria, and another favorite friend. That's right.
Hi, it's me.
Hey. It's Luca from Basement Radio.
Whoop, whoop.
We're
back
all
on.
In the studio together doing the thing with our friend Steve here as well. Shout out to all the Radio Valencia crew. big ups to everyone that worked to get this thing back on its feet.
Yeah, it's true. We couldn't have done it, really. We couldn't have halfway done it without you guys.
Yeah, we just showed up and started talking as if we had done something.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Though I have to say, it feels great to be back on the air yakking with both of you.
Yeah.
I have to say, Luca, you were there for us at the start. You were there when we were shooting in the gym. Luca was there saying, hey, you guys going to play some pickup radio?
I like this. Fun. This retconning of our origin story.
Just throwing the old mic around.
That's right. Tossing it around.
No, you guys were more like mentors in this relationship.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. You were like seasoned veterans.
Sages.
Wait, mentors or minotaurs? Which one? We were waiting at the center of the maze for you.
Yeah, and I was like, what is a radio?
How do you radio? And now you are lost in the maze. Congratulations, my friend. You are trapped in here. You're trapped in radio with us. Trapped in Radio Valencia.
Happily.
Happily, happily. So give us a preview here. This is behind the scenes. It's so rare we get to speak candidly to someone from Radio from Basement Radio, and they give us the real story.
Oh, well, we decided since it was our third season, mm-hmm. and we're marking seasons by 16 films.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Because that's
natural.
One a week.
Yeah.
Oh, that doesn't really make sense.
I don't
No, just go with it.
Sure,
I'm with it. No.
It should be 12 films, because that would be 3 months. But the
16 isn't even divisible by 3.
No, divisible by 4.
Says who? No, you know, Luca, there's a very direct question I want to ask here.
Yeah.
And that is about programming.
Uh-huh.
So this is how you know you're really onto something special. I feel possessive of it. When there is a film screen that doesn't align with my vision, I feel as though I think, what's going on here? It's such a powerful...